Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Right, there's a review here, 5 stars from Lachlan Misson from Australia. Said, lovely podcast featuring a well-informed bunch of lads, but I was just wondering when the Make-A-Wish Foundation are taking Dave back. It's a bit harsh, isn't it? It is Monday, which means it's time for the Front 3 Weekend Review with me, Adam Bolton, the one and only Lawrence McKenna.
Monday.
And of course, Statman Dave.
Buongiorno.
Chris is in New York living it up, so he misses out today, but he'll be back midweek, don't worry. But thank you so much for tuning in to the Front 3 for the first of our new and improved Monday Weekend Review podcasts. Part 1 will be the Premier League review, as always, followed by an in-depth look at Europe in Part 2. This week we're off to Germany with journalist Stefan Biankowski to talk Der Klassiker, before finally in Part 3 rounding up the rest of the key talking points from around the continent and finishing up with our game of the weekend, which this week is of course the Madrid derby. We'll also be revealing the TF3 player of the week at the end of the show, as voted for by you
definitely
on Twitter. We'll see about that. All very exciting stuff, though, I'm sure you'll agree. There's only one place to start, though. The biggest game of the Premier League weekend: Manchester United 1-1. More drop points at home for the Red Devils, a game they arguably should have won, Dave. They were the better team, I think it's fair to say. United now have only won 1 of their last 6 in the league. Does their form concern you? I mean, Jose Mourinho was talking about how they're the unluckiest team in the league.
I'd say at the moment that they are being quite unlucky in terms of not turning really good performances into wins. So I'm not really concerned in that matter, because I think United have played very well over the last, barring the Chelsea battering. They've played, you know, they played very well against Liverpool. They played well against Burnley, played well against Stoke. You know, obviously those two games finished in a draw, and then Arsenal nicking a goal from pretty much their only real attack in the game. But the only thing that was a bit concerning there is it was something that Mourinho kind of could have done tactically to negate that factor of Oxlade-Chamberlain being at right back. I don't feel like Mourinho adapted himself well enough, you know, in the last few minutes of the game. He should have potentially moved Paul Pogba onto that left-hand side to deal with the pace and power of Oxlade-Chamberlain, you know, because it was pretty, not unfair, but you can't really expect a young striker to be tracking back on 89 minutes to, you know, be blocking across. And unfortunately, that cost United the points, because they did deserve to win that game. They were very dominant. You know, the spells of the game, United started very well, then Arsenal came back into it. But that was only Arsenal's real spell from about 15 minutes to 30 minutes. And then United were just, you know, creating chances, dominating the ball outside the Arsenal box. But I think there's a number of key performers for Manchester United. Ander Herrera, Juan Mata again with a goal. He's becoming, Juan Mata's sort of like a second striker now that plays out wide. So sort of what, you know, potentially you could look at Antoine Griezmann does for Atletico Madrid in terms of he gets into those goal-scoring positions, potentially doesn't contribute sometimes in games. It's like sort of what Juan Mata's doing. He just keeps appearing in the right area, or he's running in behind. So I think he's perfect for this side, because there's quite a lot of players that like to come to the ball in this United team, and he's given it United the other option of either going in behind or waiting and delaying his run and being very clever. And credit to him again, scoring a pretty brilliant goal. He's now been directly involved in 83 goals since moving to England, and that is incredible. That's no midfielder in the Premier League's managed more in that period. So yeah, Mata excellent again, Herrera brilliant.
Just a little question: why can't you expect a young striker to be tracking back in the 89th minute?
I think you've got to think of their potentially their fitness levels, their awareness of themselves around them.
Then why is he on the pitch?
Would have put Paul Pogba out there. Because the thing with that change is, as soon as that change happened, I expected Paul Pogba to go on the left wing. Mourinho's been doing that in the past. He did that against Manchester City and completely shored up the game on that side. You know, City's right was negated completely when that happened. And it was just, if you see your opponent moving a right winger to right back, potentially you've got to make a defensive change there. You know, reorganise your team. Because Schneiderlin had come on, Herrera was playing on the right wing. Herrera was negating Monreal. Monreal had a very, very poor game in a defensive sense and an attacking sense. But if you're putting a right winger there, you've got to evaluate that there is a threat there now. So potentially Marcus Rashford, who has done some pretty decent defensive work in the last few weeks, but against an opponent that is as direct as Oxlade-Chamberlain, I think you need a bit more physique in there. I think you need a bit more power to try and win that ball or block that cross. And again, Daley Blind's positioning, you could question that as well. Didn't really go out to meet the cross, was in no man's land in between defending the near post and going out there. So I think it was just potentially a mistake from Mourinho.
Is that the problem for you then, Dave? Potentially the defence, or is it the attack? Because, I mean, United are now 9 points adrift of the top of the table. They conceded a joint most goals in that top six.
I think the defence needs to be looked at 100%. You know, you look at the centre-backs United played at the weekend, Rojo and Jones. You know, they were pretty decent against Swansea. They didn't put a foot out of line, to be quite honest, apart from potentially Phil Jones getting out, jumped and out-muscled by Olivier Giroud. But they both had pretty decent game, but they're not at that right level. They're not at the level of Premier League winners. And unfortunately, that's what you've got to set your standards to. If you eventually have aspirations to win the Premier League, is that you've got to build your defence first. That's so important. Mm. Any team that's won the Premier League ever, since the competition start, has always had a good defence. And unfortunately, United aren't anywhere near that, the required level, especially at centre-back.
Briefly, Dave, Pogba watch. Everyone always asks, how did Paul Pogba play? I mean, this week, how would you rate his performance?
Pretty good in the first half, a little bit quiet in the second half. In the first half, what he was doing so well was switching the play, but switching it very directly in terms of the shape of the passes. You know, it was very flat passes, but they were long passes, and he was isolating Monreal with Valencia. And United did a lot of good work down that side, and Marcus Rashford drifting out there. So, yeah, credit to Paul Pogba in the first half for getting United attacking down that right-hand side. But potentially in the second half, could have put his influence on the game again. And it's a work in progress, Paul Pogba. Again, he's a young player. So for me, it consistently builds.
That's Pogba watch for this week, guys. Obviously, Lawrence, Wayne Rooney came off the bench at Old Trafford on Saturday. But perhaps more interestingly, after the game, he sort of came out with
I just say, he did do a great amount of pointing in the game a lot of arguing. That really impressed me.
He does shout at the referee a lot, old Wayne Rooney.
He does, but then he's really really slowly perfected the way in which he shouts at the referee, so that it's initially intimidating, and then over time it's like, actually, I'm quite a reasonable person, sort of thing. Yeah.
Obviously, a week where he was on the front pages, of course, with his sort of antics, I think it's fair to say. But he came out after the game and... even though he's apologised earlier in the week, he's released a statement where he said that the reaction to that conduct, to those antics, has been disgraceful. Said the media is trying to write his obituary, said he won't let that happen. I mean, what do you make of that reaction from Wayne Rooney, Lawrence?
Probably a number of ways you can phrase it. The Sun was particularly vehement in their criticism. So I think certain comments were sort of directed towards certain journalists. You can't really say the media, and I don't really think he's going to pick out a newspaper because he knows certain people have deals with certain people. Obviously he's hitting back at a lot of people's claims. I think when he says things like people are trying to write my obituary, it comes across a little paranoid, a little bit ironic that he's willing to star in sort of Nike adverts and those sort of things about, the media putting him down and people unnecessarily attacking him and him sort of ending up in a dead-end job or sort of a place where he's not very happy. But then he's not happy when people do actually attack him in real life. I understand it's unfair, but at the same time, you know, he's a public figure. It sort of comes with the territory. Not that I don't have sympathy for him, but... I just still find it a little bit ironic. You know, he stays quiet on certain things and not on others. And then this is the thing that he chooses to come out with.
Yeah, I thought this was a weird... I didn't think it was a particularly smart move to come out with this.
That's unlike Wayne, because actually he's got... he's surrounded by angry middle-aged men And I imagine they'll be quite angry about this because it does affect his public image, obviously, and his public image is something he's trying to cultivate at the moment. But like I say, poorly judged. I just think it's a poorly judged comment. And, you know, if you're going to take digs at journalists, you should probably just speak to people in person.
Hmm. What about Arsenal then, Dave? Obviously, they didn't play very well at Old Trafford, but yeah, managed to snatch a point thanks to a late Olivier Giroud header. I mean, there's been all this talk of the November form for Arsenal being a tough month for them. Do you think they've lost a bit of momentum now, having drawn to Spurs and drawn to United, or do you think they're still on course?
I think that the point at United would feel like a win for those Arsenal players. You know, not a very good performance, but potentially a performance that, you know, playing so poor throughout the 90 minutes and then throwing on three strikers at the end with Giroud, Sanchez, Walcott as a front three, with Chamberlain as a right winger at right back. It was a good move from Wenger. Wenger did it, got his substitutions completely right. And credit to Arsene Wenger. And this Arsenal team, it looks like it's got the players there now to compete on multiple fronts, including the Premier League. You know, the players are all coming back. The likes of Ramsey are coming back into the team. Obviously, started against United. Didn't have his best game, but when Ramsey will hit form, that's the Ramsey you want to play with. You know, obviously, Bellerin out injured. Jenkinson didn't have the greatest of games, so potentially that's something to look at in the next few weeks, is will he be able to replicate Bellerin's, you know, fantastic attacking outlet on that right-hand side, given Arsenal's quite narrow width with Theo Walcott playing that role. Sanchez again was good in the first half, but maybe the injury in the second half obviously came out with his hamstring quite heavily taped. So that's going to be another one. Is Sanchez going to be fit? But Arsenal were resilient, and I think that's a good thing to talk about Arsenal when they want to push for the Champions League, because the Premier League title. We know that they can play beautiful football. We know they can score goals, but it's that resilience, and they had it at Old Trafford.
Yeah, I think Wenger came out after the game and said, you know, that's a game they would have lost last season. But the result does mean that Mourinho is now 12 games unbeaten in the Premier League against Arsene Wenger. But guys, can you guess the manager who is on the wrong end of the longest unbeaten run in the league against none other than Sir Alex Ferguson? The record is 17 games unbeaten.
Steve Bruce.
It is literature's own. Ooh. Steve Bruce.
Bam. Yeah, because he rolls over like a fucking dog every time he faces him.
I mean, it is easy in the end. It's easy.
That one's easy. When you think about it, that is actually the easiest one.
Yeah. Lawrence, I sense a bit of anger in your voice was it the late 2009?
I'm just saying. I do think he is... I think
it's
not great.
Arsenal then, big match for them in midweek coming up now at PSG, both joint top of Group A, so it could be the game that defines who goes through top of that group. But knowing Arsenal, they'll finish top anyway and end up facing Bayern, Real, Juventus, who are currently second in their respective groups. Elsewhere in the Premier League this weekend, Tottenham came back to beat West Ham 3-2. Fantastic game.
Adam, that must have been morale boosting for Spurs.
It was. I think you could say that. You know, obviously, Pochettino set up the team a little bit differently. He put two up top, Kane alongside Janssen, to try and cause problems, to ask questions of that back three for West Ham. But it didn't really work in the first half. You know, Spurs were poor. The play was lacking fluency. It was lacking pace in the build-up. And, of course, West Ham scored from a pretty scrappy set piece, another header. For Mikel Antonio. But Spurs managed to come back in the second half. The first 20 minutes, you know, Pochettino obviously gave him a talking to at halftime. The first sort of move Spurs managed to put together with any sort of real fluency was the goal. Janssen's shot blocked. Winks on his full debut, scoring with a rebound. So a great performance for him. But again, Spurs somehow managed to concede a penalty. I kind of felt sorry for Janssen in the end because he wasn't having a great game. And then for him to sort of grapple with Reed and concede the penalty and then get subbed straight afterwards, probably isn't going to do his confidence any favours. But having said that, you know, Heung-min Son came on for him. He brought the width that was lacking at the start of the game, the way Pochettino had set it up. He brought that danger. And in the end, he made the cross for Kane to score the equaliser and then, you know, won the penalty at the end of the day that Kane dispatched for the win. And, I mean, Harry Kane loves a London derby. I think it's 18 goals in 22 London rivalries now. So, massive win for Spurs to come back from 2-1 down, having drawn their last four games, going into this crucial game at Monaco in midweek in the Champions League, a really great win for Spurs. But what about having Harry Kane back, Dave? It's obviously a big boost for Spurs. Now he's finding his fitness, now he's finding his form as well.
I think it's absolutely massive. Harry Kane's a really weird striker where he doesn't score in August. He just doesn't fancy it in August. And obviously he went out with injury after that, after hitting a little bit of form again. But he's so crucial to the Spurs attack because he's the guy that will bring other players in. And you can kind of see already that Spurs are scoring more goals with Harry Kane back in the side. It's really simple stuff that sometimes you have to play off a player. You know, you have to play, it has to stick up top. And it wasn't sticking up top for Spurs when Kane wasn't there. You know, Janssen, he wouldn't bring players in as well as Harry Kane is doing. And we're instantly seeing the impact of Harry Kane. You know, two massive goals here, a massive goal against Arsenal, keeping his composure from the penalty spot. But I think Spurs will start kicking on now. The only thing that Spurs were struggling with this season was goals. Defensively, they were better than last season, which is absolutely incredible to say, and considering that they had the best defensive record in terms of conceding goals last year, they look even better. So I think it's going to be an interesting one for Pochettino to play with his formation, to play with the players that he has now, because he's got all the weapons are back in his squad. It's similar to Arsenal. Both North London clubs seem to be in a position where all the players are finding their form and fitness. So it's going to be the managers now to sort of apply those players to certain problems in certain formations to obviously get the wins. But Harry Kane is massive for Spurs this season in terms of scoring goals.
Obviously, bitterly disappointing for West Ham, Lawrence, to lose that lead in the dying minutes. And, you know, especially tough to take considering they've got three very tough fixtures coming up. I think they've got Manchester United away, Arsenal at home, and then Liverpool away. And they're now just a point above the drop zone. They're back in the danger, aren't they?
They were never out of danger, mate.
They had that little patch. I think they went three games unbeaten where it's kind of like, you know, okay, Slaven Bilic he's found this formation. He's found
this
way
to play. Not three games unbeaten. Good God.
But that, considering the start they had, you know, everyone was saying they'd steadied the ship. Now it seems to have slipped back.
Yeah, I don't really see that, to be honest. You know, three games unbeaten is fine, but also I don't think it's particularly impressive. You know, obviously they had some decent results in there, but then they also drew to Middlesbrough, one against Crystal Palace, and then against Sunderland. So, yeah, I mean, it's really still, I think that like David said for quite a long time, there's some problems with the actual formation at the club. There's some problems with the way that they're being managed and set up. And those things haven't been solved in a very short space of time, no matter, you know, whether really Bilic is acting in a very similar way to the way that Pardew's acting at the moment, which is kind of, you know, managing to motivate the players for certain aspects of the games, but not for others. And therefore, he hasn't got a system that you can make consistently work.
Dave, what did you make of his substitution late in the game? He brought on Nordveit for Payet. Obviously, a defensive substitution to try and shore it up, but Nordveit ended up giving away the penalty with a rash slide tackle on Son in the box. I mean, it's a risky decision to make, isn't it? Because you can see his thinking on one side. He's trying to see out the game. But at the same time, sometimes that sort of substitution invites pressure.
I think it's a good substitution. I think, you know, it was around 85 minutes, you know, 5 minutes to go in the game plus added time. I think that's a fine thing to do, a good move in terms of, you know, you want to shore yourself up at the back. But again, it was just a bit rash from Nordveit. So it was kind of like Bilic made the right decision, but then his player let him down in a way. So obviously Bilic deserves some criticism. Potentially the shape could have changed again. He's still stuck with the three, or well, the five at the back. Maybe he could have dropped into a 4-4-2 or something a little bit more simple, or a 4-5-1, because potentially, you know, playing Kiarte as a centre-back, maybe that's an issue as well, given that he's usually a central midfielder. Maybe if some of these players are playing more natural positions when the game is so tight, that West Ham could have come out with the 3 points. But I wouldn't say it was a bad decision, but the player let him down there.
They had their chances as well, West Ham, towards the end of the game when Spurs were sort of pushing forward. West Ham were countering. They had a few good chances. I mean, Zaza was through, probably should have played Payet in earlier. Potentially, you know, would have been a very different result. But it does end with Spurs getting the win, and as I said, a morale-boosting win, and the positive way to go in to that must-win Champions League game at Monaco in midweek. Also this weekend, Man City winning 2-1 at Palace, Dave, and it was all about one man, Yaya Toure.
Where did he come from? Did they finally buy him a birthday cake? What happened?
I don't know. I mean, he's...
I think he apologised, didn't he? But then after the match, it was also quite funny because Pep sort of alluded to the fact that Yaya was a nice man. He's the nice man. He's a good man. alluding to the fact that his agent is not so much.
It's an interesting one because I think City, City have looked like the best team in the Premier League by a country mile. But then again, like, you bring Yaya Toure back into this team and he can still do it. You know, yes, his work rate is not there sometimes. Yes, sometimes he's lazy on the ball. But again, you see his impact in the Premier League. One of the greatest goal-scoring Premier League central midfielders we're ever going to see in Yaya Toure. And the two goals that he scored, both were really good goals, and they were classic Yaya Toure goals, picking the ball up, playing a 1-2, then putting the ball in the back of the net. He makes it so simple when he's on the ball. And again, this is a different Yaya Toure than the Yaya Toure that Guardiola managed at Barcelona. You know, that Yaya Toure was a defensive midfielder. You know, the shackles were on him. He had a lot of responsibility. He wasn't a marauding central midfielder that he became in the later stages of his career. No credit to, Roberto Mancini, you know, the old Man City boss, for giving him that freedom and making him this sort of world-beating, goal-scoring central midfield machine. But it will be interesting to see whether Guardiola does stick with him and does use him, because two big goals away at Palace. Obviously, Palace struggling with form at the moment, but they're defensively, they can be difficult to break down, and Yaya Toure had that answer. So is Guardiola going to use him again in these situations when they need a goal?
Good option to have, good player to have in your squad, as Guardiola said after the game. As for Palace, though, Lawrence, it's 5 defeats in a row now. They're officially the worst team in 2016 in all of the top 4 divisions in English football, averaging just 0.71 points per game. Should we be putting a little bit of money on Guardiola to be the next Premier League manager to be sacked?
Yeah, but although I think that's been the case for a while, hasn't it? And I think sort of the Pardew effect is still there. The fact is, though, with Pardew, that he gets just enough points just before he gets sacked, or just before the point where he's not sacked. He sort of says, well, I've got the England job, or something mental, and then he leaves. So I also think, really realistically with Palace, who are they going to go for if they sack Pardew?
That's a good point. Well, there's not many options out there, is there? Dave, is there anyone that could potentially come in and do a job for Palace? Maybe the relegation specialist himself, Big Sam.
Big Sam.
Are looking up for Moyes. You never know.
I'd love that. Big Sam to return to the Premier League in January, take a load more bungs, but then get Palace to safety. I'd love to see that.
I reckon allegedly.
This is quite a sort of Sam Allardyce side that Pardew's been erecting in a way. You know, think of the centre-backs. You've got Scott Dan in there, very physical. Christian Benteke, Big Sam loves the target, man. You got a little bit of pace out wide and Wilfred Zaha. And then players like Joe Ledley and McCarthy in midfield, or MacArthur, in midfield. This has got Sam Allardyce written all over it.
It just makes sense.
Maybe although you can maybe, yeah.
What?
Well, you can't just keep employing wankers as your manager. I just hope it comes good.
It's a good point. It's
strategy.
A good point. Palace do have Swansea away next, though. So that is a chance for them. Swansea being rooted to the bottom of the table for Palace to get some points on the board. As for City, they go away to Gladbach in the week in the Champions League. They're currently second in their group, 2 points behind Barcelona. So a win there would be pretty important, I think it's fair to say. Chelsea, Dave, top of the table, winning 1-0 away at Middlesbrough. 6th straight win for them, 6th straight clean sheet as well. 10th goal of the season for Diego Costa. We were speaking in recent weeks about how he's refound that form during that title-winning season under Jose Mourinho. And Conte came out after the game saying he's one of the best strikers in the world. I mean, it's obvious. It's hard to disagree with that, isn't it?
It really is. I think when Costa is motivated, he is the best. You know, he's definitely up there with the best strikers in world football, the Lewandowskis, Aubameyangs, whoever is at that peak, he has got to be up there. In terms of his intensity and a defensive aspect, it's just a weapon for you. It's so good to have a striker that works as hard and is as aggressive and it is as much of a troublemaker as Diego Costa. But then he's clinical. And that's something that he dropped off at the end of last season, or when Chelsea were going through their really bad run of form. Costa it didn't look like he was up for it. It didn't look like he was motivated. He was, pulling the same move every single time, drifting into the left channel, cutting into his right foot. It was too easy. Now we've got Diego Costa that's angry, that's running around, that's moving into the space when he needs to. He's playing, picking up the ball, playing it out, and then getting into that penalty area. And it's it's very simple. He's a simple striker in a way. You know, he's quite an old traditional English striker, I would say. Sort of, a big, burly target man that's going to put a shift in, but he can finish, and he has that, he has that technique as well. He has that Brazilian technique. So he can always find the back of the net. But again, scoring the crucial goal for Chelsea, against Middlesbrough, and a fantastic performance defensively for Chelsea again. Victor Moses was probably the standout player at right wing back again. What an incredible season he's having. But no, credit to Chelsea again. Conte is a genius at the moment. I think we can all say, you know, the 6 straight wins, 17 goals scored in the Premier League. That's more than any other player, any other club, sorry. Not conceded a goal yet since switching to this formation. David Luiz looks like a superstar. I think we're running out of things to say about this Chelsea team. Yeah. They need to lose.
I mean, the thing is, at the beginning of the season, I think I really doubted whether we could get the Chelsea players to do it. And I was sort of wondering how he fit that together. I will be interested to see if they do get any injuries, if he can continue that, because there are certain key players in there that the system relies on in order for others to perform. And also, obviously, with Chelsea, this weekend, Rory has nominated Victor Moses for player of the year. That's Rory Jennings from the Chelsea Fan Channel. Wow. Rory Jennings fame has nominated Victor Moses for player of the weekend.
I think you're right, Lawrence, in that we've spoken before about how Conte's found that system. All these sort of pieces that you'd think wouldn't quite fit, square pegs and round holes, it all seems to be coming together, like Victor Moses, as you're saying there. But if they do get an injury to one of those sort of players, could it all fall apart? I think that remains to be seen. For the moment, though, they are in this incredible run. They've beaten United, they've beaten Everton and Southampton during those 6 games. But now back-to-back matches in the league coming up against Spurs first at home and then Manchester City. Do you think that's a true test of their credentials?
Certainly. So I think against Spurs, it's going to be a fascinating game, especially if Spurs go 3 at the back. I'll be interested to see if the pressing on pressing works. And I'll also be interested to see how much Pep Guardiola changes it up, because he's had a couple of big games, but arguably this is going to be his most challenging one so far.
As for Middlesbrough, Dave, not a bad performance, but we've said it before, they're lacking that cutting edge. I mean, Alvaro Negredo hasn't scored since the opening day of the season against Stoke, and he's now gone 886 Premier League minutes without finding the net.
Yeah, he's in a really bad patch of form. Maybe it's time to bring in the Football League goal-scoring legend of Jordan Rose, because he knows how to find the back of the net. Potentially, it's time for him. You know, he's only had... He's 4 appearances so far this season. I think you could just give him a go. I think he's a player that would work hard for you, that can find the back of the net, and I think will make the step up to Premier League football eventually. You know, you saw his transition from a League One player to a Championship player, fully successful there, and, you know, destroying the Championship season after season. Now he's in the Premier League. Give him a chance.
Chelsea then, top of the table after this Premier League weekend, leapfrogging Liverpool, Lawrence, who drew 0-0 at Southampton. Stifled by the Saints. As Jamie Carragher said, was it just one of those days for Jurgen Klopp's side?
I do get when people say that. But at the same time, Liverpool didn't finish their chances. And I think they didn't get into good enough goal-scoring opportunities. Other days... I think, you know, Firmino and Coutinho and Mane, all 3 of those had chances. I think Chan also had one as well. But ultimately, if I can name the chances, maybe they're not creating enough. And I think they got themselves into good positions. Very impressed with Van Dijk and Font at the back, because both of them put in sort of last-ditch tackles, which probably also shows the way that Southampton were playing. I felt a little bit sorry for Southampton, actually, because people were saying that they sort of sat back and didn't go for the win. But I thought they actually counter-attacked quite nicely. And created more than enough chances to worry Liverpool, not only in a highlights package, but in the full game as well. Still, Liverpool without Lallana in midfield look like they've got a different structure, and Wijnaldum isn't quite fitting into that. Liverpool take the positive away, the clean sheet, I guess. Liverpool missed opportunity because they should be beating a side like Southampton and should be finishing chances against them. And there's no disrespect to Southampton, just...
No.
They just should.
Liverpool only a point behind Chelsea, should be said. But Dave, Lawrence highlighted the man there, Virgil van Dijk. Impressive once again. He's quickly becoming one of the best centre-backs in the Premier League, isn't he?
I think he was the second best centre-back in the Premier League last season, behind Koscielny. I'd put him potentially above the 2 Spurs players. I thought he was absolutely phenomenal last year.
You're forgetting Big Toby there?
Yeah, that's just my personal preference. I really like him as a player. I feel like, you know, his ability to command and dictate from deep in terms of, you know, bullying strikers in a defensive sense, using his physicality and his ability to, you know, to win tackles and so forth. Very, very impressive against Liverpool. 100% of his tackles, 75% of his aerial duels, 2 clearances, 2 interceptions. It was just a really good game from Van Dijk, and in a way, you can give him and Font, as Lawrence did, credit for keeping that clean sheet. One question I'd send back to Lawrence is, in terms of Liverpool, do you think they lack maybe a natural orthodox number nine off the bench, given the poor form of Origi and Sturridge?
I don't necessarily think Origi's been in poor form. I just think he hasn't had games. He's been coming back from injury, and Klopp's been looking to use him when he can, but I still think they've not played sides that maybe he thinks he wants to deploy Origi against. Sturridge, I think, is probably on his way out of the side from the noises that the media are making, but Klopp's trying to make the most of him. I do think they lack someone who's going to finish consistently, but at the same time, I'm still really impressed by the way that Firmino moves and his movement. I still think Klopp had that at Dortmund, though, and I wonder if he's going to try and instill someone similar at Liverpool, Lewandowski style character, or get someone like that that he can sort of show, you know, this is what Liverpool can do as well.
Mm. As for Liverpool's cross-city rivals Everton, they drew 1-0 at home with Swansea. Bob Bradley denied his first win as Swansea coach thanks to a late Everton equaliser from Seamus Coleman. It's now 11 games without a win for the Swans, Lawrence.
Yeah, bloody hell. But not all of them under Bob Bradley, and things are slowly changing, I think. To challenge Everton like this, aside from, you'd say, superior in the way they've got talent distributed across the pitch, I think is still impressive. I'm always impressed by the way that Bob Bradley uses all the players to the sort of the best of the system, if you like. I still think he's instilling his ideas there. He's had an international break to get to that point now. And even though they've gone without a win, I'd stick with Bob Bradley. Some people are already saying they should get rid of him. I don't quite get that.
He's gone 5 without a win. His first 5 without a win. Not a great
There's
record.
Some draws in there, though, as well, aren't there?
And of course.
You know, it's the same as, you know, it's the same as that unbeaten run beat, you know. If you've got a draw and they're getting some points, I think it's still worth having someone. And I think essentially they're playing better football as well. So it almost goes down to the, what's a wider version of chances created and sort of probable goals?
That's for you, Dave, I guess.
Expected goals, you mean?
Well, what? No, I'm saying, like, you know, what's a wider version of expected goals? Like, is it like, you know, probable goals that they get in the end, or like, you know,
yeah,
wins maybe?
Yeah, I think they're called Gary goals.
Gary, what's Gary? So I'd say Swansea are still Gary goals.
Disappointing that the defending for the equaliser was quite sloppy. Yeah. Shame they couldn't quite sort of hold out.
When it's such fine margins, though, then those sort of mistakes. I mean, you do worry that those sort of mistakes are the kind of thing they'll look back on this season and just say, we would have stayed up if that happened. Yeah.
They are now bottom of the table, Sunderland leapfrogging them. As I said, Bob Bradley's gone his first 5 out of win at Swansea. But enough stat attack for you. Do you know who has gone the longest start as a manager at a club in the Premier League without a win? It's 15 games.
Was it a Fulham manager?
I don't believe so, no.
I think... It wasn't. It's on the tip of my tongue, but I can't remember.
Dave, any guesses?
I'm trying to think as well. It's got to be someone that's like been at like Sunderland or someone rubbish like that.
It's not Dick Advocaat.
Yeah, but...
it's someone like that. Is it the guy who looked? No, it's not, because he was at Fulham.
Was Niall Quinn ever manager of Sunderland or just chairman?
I think he was sort of manager from the stands, wasn't he?
Yeah, pretty much manager. It's definitely not going to be Sam Allardyce anyway, because he'd never let that happen.
Sam Allardyce would never let it happen, it's true. It was the one and only Mick McCarthy.
Mick McCarthy.
Oh,
yes.
Oh, Wolves.
The man himself, yes. Yeah. Not.
He would not. I tell you, he would not be happy with that.
It was actually...
That's not Mick McCarthy. Actually.
It was with Sunderland, like you said, Dave. 15 without victory in the Premier League.
Jesus.
So there you have it. What about Everton, though, Dave? Obviously, they snatched that equaliser, but the fans were booing the team, weren't happy with the performance, not happy with their current form as well. It's only one win in the last 7 after securing 4 wins in their first 5 Premier League games. All the sort of early season optimism seems to have dissipated a little bit. I mean, they're still 7th, but Coleman needs to find a solution, and quickly, doesn't he?
Yeah, it's quite interesting. A wise man once said, Ronald Koeman is an overrated manager in the Premier League and was helped out by the Southampton system, and that's why they look so good. But
was that man you, Dave?
Moving away from that...
Wise men can be dickheads, can't they?
I think still got a bit of an issue at centre-half. You know, Ashley Williams was a good signing. Maybe a little bit too expensive for his age, but a good signing. I think finding him a partner has got to be crucial for Everton in January to regain some of this form. Jagielka, again, very, very, very sloppy, both with the ball and without it. Again, giving away a crucial penalty for Swansea. Very, very poor defending. But I think Koeman tried everything. You know, he did try. Went to a back three towards the second half and ended with about six attackers on the pitch in Ross Barkley, Bolasie, De La Feo, Morales, Lukaku and Enner Valencia. So he did go for it. And obviously they did nick the goal towards the last part of the game. But I think it's working out their best system as well as working out the best parts of their system. Is it in a back three? Because they started off the season playing a back three. And they were, you know, they did that quite well. They gave Spurs a very, very good game early doors. But they need to get that form back. And I think Phil Jagielka might not be that man to push Everton to where they want to go. That centre back is absolutely crucial in January.
That was the third penalty he's conceded this season, Phil Jagielka. So not great. Not a great record to have. But a point apiece at Goodison Park, then leaving Swansea at the bottom of the table after they were overtaken by Sunderland. A big win for the Black Cats. They are off the bottom of a 3-0 win over Hull. And I never thought I'd say it, but Victor Anachebe was unplayable. Working well, you know.
He's in great form, isn't he?
He is. I mean, we were talking about big men, little men last week on the Q&A.
About 3 years ago. Fine Fettle.
But alongside Jermaine Defoe, you know, it's a good combo. Yeah. He scored his 150th Premier League goal. As well. So, good day for David Moyes' side. And now we're only 3 points off Derby's infamous final tally in the 07-08 season, which I suggested a few weeks ago they might not be able to reach, but it's all looking good. Back-to-back wins, you know. Everything's coming up Millhouse. So, they are off the bottom of the table.
David Moyes, eh?
Everything's coming up Moyes' house. Does that make sense?
Everything coming up Moyes' house. Oh, Gil!
Elsewhere, Stoke losing at home to Bournemouth, a 1-0 win for them, their first away win of the season, bringing to an end a six-game unbeaten run for Mark Hughes' side. Nathan Aki with the winner for the Cherries. Stoke sort of failed to take the chances. I mean, Bojan missed a penalty, of course, as well. Bournemouth up to ninth now, so a good win for Eddie Howe's side. But the win was sort of overshadowed this weekend, Lawrence, by, Jordan Ibe being robbed.
Yeah,
in
south-east London, which is where he's from London originally. It's a story in a sense. You feel a bit sorry for him because he's had a hard time since he's left Liverpool. He's not had any sort of man of the match performances, and then it kind of gives the press just another thing to sort of pile on. I just feel sorry for him, Having said that, Bournemouth actually played quite well, and away win at Stoke. Maybe the kind of thing that some other managers would say, well, we can't get that because we can't do it on a really nasty day in Stoke.
They made off the robbers with a 25 grand Rolex, apparently.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is
so one day's pay.
Yeah. I think my watch cost 80 quid. I thought that was a bit extravagant, to be honest.
Yeah. If I'm honest, I thought that was a bit extravagant for you.
Yeah, 80 quid watch. I'd be like, well, am I sure about this? This is
who do you think
much.
You are, mate?
This is a bit much. But you know,
especially now you're freelance, you need to be
can't be spending that sort of money. You need to be frugal. You know, you need to be smart. How much did your watch cost, Lawrence? Have you got a watch?
I've got a
watch. Here we go. How much do those Apple watches? How much do they set you back nowadays?
Tax free, mate, isn't it?
Oh, of course.
Yeah,
Dave, are you a watch wearer?
I'm not a massive fan of having something on my wrist, so no, unfortunately not. It's not for me, guys. Not
You'd
for
rather
me.
Have a lady on an arm.
What if you could have a? Yeah. What if you could have a 25 grand Rolex on there? Do you think you'd?
I don't think I'd want to. I think I'd always be worried about like banging it against something.
Be really self conscious. Be like, oh, what is it? Yeah. Am I going to break it? Is it a bit showy? Is it a bit?
If I had a 25 grand Rolex, I think I'd probably put up a bit of a fight with to these armed robbers, which probably wouldn't be the smartest thing to do.
No, you'd be
probably shit. Shouldn't buy a watch then.
Probably should buy a watch. That's the lesson from this weekend. Don't buy watches. just problems. Just brings problems. I'm not sure if I had 25 grand as well, the first thing I'd buy would be a watch. But obviously, Jordan Ibe's got more than that.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's not like it's his first 25 grand and he's gone, bam, I'll take that. Yeah.
Rolex, straight away.
At the same time, he's only a quite young player, so that probably is quite a significant amount of money for him.
Anyway, hope Jordan Ibe is all right. Happened in South East London, Surrey Quays. My old, near where we went to uni, Lawrence.
Surrey Quays is actually quite a nice area. It's considered to be one of the nicer areas in that area.
I mean, apparently not. My cousin lives there, so watch out if you're listening. She's not.
She doesn't have a Rolex, so it doesn't really matter. That's the longest we've spent chatting about anything on this podcast.
In depth. The most in depth we've gone this weekend is on Jordan Ibe's report. Watch talk. Hashtag watch talk, guys. Tell us which watches you have, how much they cost you, you know, all that sort of good stuff.
Hashtag watch out. Am I right?
Yes. That's perfect.
Or hashtag hide your watch, because you don't want to get your watch out in the wrong places. Yeah, anyway, for a bit of Jordan Ibe. Good that he is so well supported by the people. I like Jordan Ibe. He's a good young kid, so I feel sorry for him that he got robbed.
Good hair. Leicester 1, Lawrence. The champions remain without an away win this season. Another disappointing defeat for them, conceding after just 33 seconds against Watford. Back-to-back defeats now, and only one win in seven. Only 2 points off the drop zone now. I mean, people have been making jokes about it, but could the unthinkable happen? Could they be relegated, Lawrence?
No. Possibly, yeah. Although, you know what? Probably not, considering there are a lot of worse teams in the Premier League than them. I think they'll probably snatch just enough points. The sense of inertia around the side, I still think they, like we've said time and time again on this podcast, not filled that gap in midfield in the right way. And I also think that Watford found a really good way around that with Troy Deeney up front. Mm.
It's a number of factors together, isn't it, Dave? We're talking about Kante missing. We've all spoken about how much, they miss him. Mahrez has lost his form. We're talking about Huth and Wes Morgan at centre-back. They're not performing as they were last season. And, of course, Jamie Vardy. I mean, what's happened to him, Dave? Because he's now 13 games without a goal for Leicester. After scoring in midweek for England, this was kind of seen as a game where he might refind his spark.
I think with Vardy, it was it was a form thing last season. It was a brilliant season for him. He won the Premier League. He was absolutely brilliant. But technically, a lot of the goals that he did score was, you know, clean for own goal, not much thinking before he put the ball in the back of the net. I think he's thinking a bit too much this season. He's thinking, you know, the pressure's around him, and it's kind of putting that concern in his head that I'm not going to put the ball in the back of the net. Where last season it was all on instinct. So he just needs to go back to his instinctive play in a way and continue working hard and continue running. I think the thing with Watford, though, you know, they did set up in this 3-5-2 or the 3-4-2-1 system, and that kind of massively outdoes a 4-4-2, unfortunately. You have a spare man at the back and you control midfield. And Leicester City are going to have to tactically evolve themselves, unfortunately. They haven't done that this season. Ranieri's gone the same way as last year. And Watford, like you mentioned, scored after 33 seconds. Basically, Watford did what Leicester City were doing last season, smash and grab, sit back, and then counter-attack. And when you're playing these systems in the 4-4-2, there's too much space for the break if you lose that first goal. So Leicester City need to potentially move to a 4-3-3, or maybe you stick Mahrez inside, you know, behind Jamie Vardy, but there needs to be some answers because it's too easy to play against this Leicester City team right now.
The tinker man needs to tinker once again. Maybe the formations are like that. That's interesting. They have always got the Champions League, though. They are top of the group with 10 points. They're playing Bruges midweek, who have 0 points. So looking good to finish first, go through strongly into the next round. And maybe after the shock triumph last season, they could go all the way, stun the world, win the Champions League, Lawrence. Strange things have happened, you know?
Strange things have happened in that they won the league last season.
That was pretty strange.
I still think, though, that they will find a system. Does it worry you that, I mean, I don't think he would get sacked, but if they were if there was the problem of relegation just looming, do you think they'd sack him and sort of bring in someone like Big Sam?
Big Sam, he's just the name on the top of everyone's list. They wouldn't sack him. If at the moment, you know, as I said, they're only 2 points above the drop zone. I think the club, after what he did last season, Ranieri deserves a chance to get them out of that situation, to get them out of trouble. And I don't personally think they will get relegated. I think they have enough to avoid the drop. But of course, if they do end up going down, then yeah, I think unfortunately it would all be over for him, surely, Dave.
Yeah, I think it would be, and Big Sam would return and lift Leicester City gloriously to their second title ever. But yeah, I can't wait for Big Sam to be back.
You just want Big. You just want to see him back. You don't care who gets sacked. You just want him back.
Yeah, I want someone to be sacked and Big Sam to come to the Premier League so I can start supporting Big Sam again.
Finally, tonight's big, huge, epic Monday Night Football clash is West Brom versus Burnley. The Hawthorns. Burnley looking to maintain their recent good form. They've won two in their last three. There's a draw in there as well. While West Brom will hope to do the same. They won against Leicester 2-1 for the international break, which was their first win in six. Burnley poor away from home, though. West Brom poor at home, having won only one of the last night. So undoubtedly, it'll be a thrilling 0-0.
So wait, where are West Brom good?
West Brom are not good.
Right.
They're not good.
Just checking.
Sounds to me like they need Big Sam.
Oh, God. Right. Time for part two. Let's go to Germany.
Not literally.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Right, so we're joined now by sports journalist, our man on the ground in Germany, Stefan Biankowski. Stefan, thank you so much for coming back on the front three.
It's a pleasure. Good day to you.
So, we've got to talk about De Clasico, obviously one of the biggest games in Europe over the weekend. A narrow 1-0 win for Dortmund, but did the game live up to its Clasico billing, Stefan?
Yeah, that's a good question. I certainly enjoyed it. I think despite the scoreline that suggests a very dull 1-0 win, I thought it was a really fascinating encounter between two good teams. It's probably the first time this season we've seen someone really have a go at Dortmund at home. I found it fascinating the way that Dortmund set up, and I think by and large Tuchel got his tactics spot on, and you know, quite rightly walked away with 3 points from this game.
Ancelotti seems to have his side in the trusty 4-3-3. You're talking there about how Tuchel set up his team. How did he sort of go about getting this win?
Yeah, well, this seems to be a problem that's kind of dogged Bayern this season, in the sense that Ancelotti seems insistent on his 4-3-3 system, which notably doesn't seem to help Thomas Müller too much. Now, a large part of that's probably due to the fact that he's quite tired from European Championships in the summer, as is Robert Lewandowski, although Lewandowski's a far more direct player, so he's still scoring goals. Although both of them really looked off the pace in this game, and actually Lewandowski was limping for large parts of it, and afterwards in the mix zone he had a bandage around his ankle. So you know, this is a Bayern, and I think that really sums up Bayern at the moment. They're missing a lot of key players in this game. I think Arjen Robben was probably the most crucial one they missed, and I going into the game I actually thought they'd miss the more physical players like Vidal and Martinez, because I actually thought Tuchel would have set up his Dortmund team to really harass Bayern, but instead He decided to play a defensive counter-attacking system, which works well when you have players like Ramos and Aubameyang and Schürrle running off the ball. So what actually ended up happening was that instead of a physical encounter, Bayern were actually asked to break down this defensive Dortmund team. And with a defunct Müller and Lewandowski and a Ribéry who, to be fair, gave his best but still isn't 100%, they just couldn't do it for large parts of the game. Dortmund were happy to give Bayern the ball, and in large parts Bayern dribbled down both wings and just swung the ball into the box hopefully, and that seemed to suit Dortmund perfectly. But I think once again it's a Bayern team who looks sluggish, who don't exactly know what they're doing under Ancelotti, but also with the caveat that they are missing key attacking players. I think perhaps another telling fact is the only real player that they could bring on In an attacking sense, was Douglas Costa. it'd be weird if Diego Costa came in. He came on for Kimmich, and you know he sprinted around a bit and he had a few shots, but not even he could do too much. I think what we're seeing right now is a Bayern team that aren't exactly, you know, things haven't really clicked into gear under Ancelotti yet, but they are also missing a lot of key too.
You're talking about the injuries there, of course. Do you expect Ancelotti? Do you expect things to start clicking? Because, I mean, how much of a concern is their current form? It's only 2 wins in their last 6 in the league.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite interesting. I do wonder when things will turn on him. In the recent history, we've really grown used to Bayern being this spotless, calm, dominant, deity in European football, because they have enjoyed a lot of success, obviously under Pep Guardiola, and before him, Jupp Heynckes, obviously winning the European Cup. But we have to remember that before that, there was the years under Van Gaal, which, you know, Bayern really did come off the, the wheels began to fall off a number of times. And following this match, the real question I was asking myself was, when does that happen for Ancelotti? Because he has to welcome Leverkusen at the Allianz Arena, a team under Roger Schmidt who regularly caused all sorts of trouble for Pep Guardiola when this team were playing at their very best, and a team who have, of course, beaten Dortmund this season already. Sure, they lost on Friday. I'm sure we're going to talk about that momentarily. But then they also have to play Leipzig at the end of the season. Now, I think this team that Ancelotti has should still be winning those games. But Dortmund, Frankfurt, Hoffenheim, Cologne have all shown it. This Bayern team are nowhere near the best right now. And I think that itself actually galvanises other teams. You have to remember that it's much the case as maybe in the Premier League with Man United in the past under Alex Ferguson, where teams would show up at Old Trafford and it would almost seem as though they'd accepted they weren't going to win. In large parts, that's what happened to some of the teams in the Bundesliga under Pep Guardiola. It couldn't be further from the truth this season. And that's obviously compounding into the fact that Ancelotti has hit the ground, and he hasn't been running immediately, to muddle up that metaphor. He has to keep these discs spinning, and it doesn't seem to be working. I'm not entirely sure how it's going to work, to be honest with him, unless Robin can come back and keep fit, and he and Ribery can kind of regain that kind of form that has so regularly. You have to remember that for large parts of Pep's reign at Bayern, Robin was the key man, and he was the man who got them out of trouble a lot of times when consistency or complacency came calling. If he can come back from injury and do that again, then sure, Bayern might get back on track. But there does seem to be a lot of work here, and there seems to be a lot of... I think this team's also aging as well. You have players like Xabi Alonso, Philipp Lahm, and even Frank Ribery. These guys aren't getting any younger, and they aren't really being properly replaced yet either. So, yeah, I think there's a lot wrong at Bayern right now.
Obviously, a big win for Dortmund. Thomas Tuchel's first win over Munich as Dortmund coach, but perhaps more importantly, in the context of the league, lifts his side up to third. They're now just 3 points behind Carlo Ancelotti's side, Stefan.
Yeah, and I think this is actually quite an important win. As you said, it's Tuchel's first win over Bayern as Dortmund coach, which was something was often lauded despite an outstanding season last year. He just couldn't get near Pep Guardiola. So that's obviously something for him to enjoy. Although, in terms of his personality, I'm not entirely sure he really bothers with these things too much. But I think someone who might are some of the players in this team who, you know, a win over Bayern can certainly do all sorts for their encouragement. I mean, you have to remember that large majority of this team didn't play under Jurgen Klopp when they were winning titles. Schmelzer is perhaps the only one that comes to mind. Sure, Götze was there in the early days as well, Piszczek. But largely this team is a new team, and it's full of young players who, sure, maybe full of confidence, but they've never really had to grasp the idea that they can beat Bayern Munich. And last season, they were shown that they couldn't. So not only to go within 3 points of Bayern and to be around that stage come Christmas is actually an outstanding achievement for any team in Germany. But for this young Dortmund team, who are also missing key players, for example, Marco Reus is still to come back, who are missing key players, this is also something that seems to shatter, you know, a glass ceiling for them, I think. And I thought it was quite, I mean, to be honest, one of the things that really stood out for me in this game was the way that Mario Götze was playing as well. He seemed to have a real fire in his belly in terms of trying to get one over the team who, under Pep, largely didn't think he was good enough, ultimately. He had an outstanding game and he obviously set up the sole goal, but he was constantly, he really looked back to his best. And it really did seem to put the, you know, the wind in Dortmund's sails. And if they can continue this kind of form and keep this kind of level with Bayern going into the winter break, then it'll be huge for their morale.
Of course, the draw means that Bayern were knocked off the top spot for the first time since September 2015 by none other than Leipzig, who are now the first team to go their first 11 matches unbeaten after their 3-2 win over Leverkusen. I mean, we spoke a few weeks back about the controversy surrounding the club, about their impressive start to the season, and they're now 3 points clear at the top. Are we about to see Leipzig do a Leicester, Stefan? Or as I should say, are they about to do a Kaiserslautern?
I'm glad you said that. I'm sure. I'm no doubt you noticed my tweet. I took some exception to people calling them the new Leicester. I think they're quite different. To use it as a broadly speaking, yes. I mean, there's absolutely no reason to suggest that they can't keep this up for the time being. I think, although Saturday's game was a blockbuster, I actually think their game with Leverkusen on Friday was possibly one of the best games I've seen this year. It really was something else, and two teams really going at it attacking wise, two teams that can play great football, and it showed immense character from Leipzig to come from 2-1 down to win the game 3-2. I think a large part of that was because Çalhanoğlu missed a penalty in the second half, and it seemed, from that point on, it seemed as though Leverkusen were just destined to just stumble, but once again we saw players like Forsberg and Poulsen and Keita, these young guys who were playing in the second division last season. Well, Keita wasn't. He was playing in Switzerland or Austria. You know, this is, once again, I thought it was quite interesting, actually, after the game, Ralf Hasenhüttl, the coach, brought everyone into the middle of the pitch, and he had a big huddle, and he gave a really almost gladiatorial speech to the team. And it really did seem, it's the kind of thing you'd see in England in the last maybe 8 or 10 games when, you know, a title challenger has gone from a draw to a last-minute winner. Yeah. It kept that momentum going. It really had that kind of appeal to it. And I have nothing but respect and admiration for the work that he's done there. I think outside of maybe Roger Schmidt and Thomas Tuchel, I think Hasenhüttl's actually won more Bundesliga points in 2016 with Ingolstadt and then Leipzig than any other coach. So he himself is undoubtedly one of the best coaches in Germany. I know there are other coaches who are perhaps younger and more appealing to the media. People get excited about them because they're younger, but I can't fault Hasenhüttl for anything this season. And the way he's got his team playing is outstanding. That's the other thing. It's not as if Leipzig are just full of star players. They haven't just bought a living Bundesliga title challenging players. They've bought specifically young players, and they're all running through walls for Hasenhüttl, and it's an absolute pleasure to watch.
And as you sort of said, I think it's a month away, but Bayern taking on Leipzig, I think it's 21st of December maybe, so it's exactly a month. That's going to be one to look forward to. They are 3 points clear at the top of the league, though, 6 wins in a row. Incredible stuff for Leipzig. Meanwhile, Cologne remain fourth after a last gasp win over Gladbach. Another goal, and it's all about Anthony Modeste right now, Stefan, the joint top scorer in the league.
Yeah, I mean, I think if I was to recommend going back and checking the highlights of any game, this might be one of them simply because of the sheer nonsense of it all. Gladbach went a goal up through Lars Stindl, and for the large part, going into halftime, they actually looked like the better team. And, you know, you didn't expect, you kind of thought, oh, right, well, this is Gladbach at home, they should be able to wrap this one up. And then all of a sudden, the ball comes into the box and Vestergaard, who is a Viking-like defender for Gladbach, he's absolutely humongous, he heads the ball and it ends up hitting off of Modeste's head. They both jump for the ball. Vestergaard goes to clear it, hits off Modeste's head and then flies into the back of the post. And it kind of sums up just how things seem to be going for Modeste right now. He's on fire. He can't stop scoring goals. And he's almost single-handedly dragging this Cologne team from result to result at the moment. Of course, what actually ended up winning it was a last last-minute free kick for Risa, which was truly outstanding. That's the if people are listening, I really couldn't recommend enough giving that a quick Google on YouTube or whatever, because that was something else. And I think, unfortunately, it just kind of seems to sum up Gladbach's luck right now. They're doing dreadful, and despite everything they may try and do, a deflection and a last-minute free kick from, 30 yards out just seems to... It just seems to be their luck right now, and I don't know if Andrew Schubert's going to be able to survive this. But once again, Cologne, I can assure you that the city was absolutely jumping after this, because people may not know this, but Gladbach and Cologne are very close to each other, and it's a local derby of sorts. And Cologne, being a very fiercely loyal city, I can assure you they absolutely enjoyed it. So that was surely a highlight of the Bundesliga this weekend, no doubt.
Finally, rounding out the top five, it's Hoffenheim. Man of the moment, Julian Nagelsmann's side, maintaining their unbeaten start to the season. Stefan, with a 2-2 draw.
Yeah, this is actually an interesting game. I think most people actually thought Hoffenheim absolutely walk this game, simply because of their form. The last match day, they managed to wrestle a point off Bayern Munich, you know, so to go up against the Hamburg team that have, I think, can see, give away more red cards and scored goals this season going into the match, was something else. But I think what we actually saw here was Marcus Gisdol, who was appointed the coach at Hamburg a few weeks ago, slowly but surely beginning to work his magic here. I'm not the hugest fan of Marcus Gisdol. I think he's a pretty bog standard, solid Premier League, Bundesliga coach. But that's perhaps all he needs. In the midweek, he decided to take the captaincy of Giroud, and he said he wanted to give it to Sakai, who he ended up moving into midfield. And for large parts, it seemed to work. Hamburg looked much better, but Hoffenheim as well seemed to really still have that steely resilience to really see a result. But for Hamburg to get a point here is quite impressive. Lewis Holtby in particular looked like he was back to his best. Filip Kostic, who's a really impressive young winger who they signed off Stuttgart for a lot of money, finally seems to look like the kind of player that they'd bought. And Nikolai Müller as well, who's now scored more goals than Thomas Müller this season. He seems to be a player who really is getting stuck in as well. So I know a lot of the praise right now is on Julian Nagelsmann, and he's still doing an outstanding job. And of course, they are still undefeated. But I think this might be an interesting point to clock for Hamburg. If they do go on and begin to turn their form around, I think this would be the game people know come Christmas or May, when they think, right, this seems to be the moment that Gisdol began to work his magic on Hamburg.
Right, that is your Bundesliga rounded up. Thank you so much, Stefan, for coming back on the front three. Where can the listeners find more of you?
You can, of course, find me on Twitter at SBienkowski, and I'm also on Facebook at Stefan Bienkowski.
Thanks again to Stefan Bienkowski for coming on the show. Dave, your thoughts on De Clasico briefly?
I think the 3-5-2 used by Thomas Tuchel was absolutely perfect to start the game. Bayern couldn't deal with the midfield runners, and then switching to the classic 5-4-1 that Thomas Tuchel used at Mainz and has used at Borussia Dortmund really worked. And they were a big threat on the break, Borussia Dortmund, throughout the whole game. I thought Mario Götze was very good in the first half.
That was an excellent and concise summary, Dave.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Before we get on to the game of the weekend, let's round up some of the other key fixtures and results around Europe. Of course, last night, Dave, was the Derby della Madonnina. Honours even. AC Milan 2, Inter Milan 2. What were your thoughts on this one?
Oh, I really enjoyed it. It was a really good game. Inter Milan dominated early doors, really good pressing through the middle. Bonaventura, though, his energy, his work rate, his ability to carry the ball. I really like him as a player. He's so flexible. He can play on the left wing, can play central midfield. And he's a nice player, you know, coming from Atalanta. He's one of those players that sort of evolved through his career and got better and better and better. Now at AC Milan, he's finally showing the world that he's a very, very good player. But Suso, what a performance from, you know, a player with such potential at Liverpool. Floated around Europe for a bit, was at Genoa, was at everywhere. Now AC Milan looks at home again. Both of his goals were excellent goals. His first goal was a brilliant individual strike coming from his left foot. Then a little bit lucky, fortuitous on the second goal, but still a great goal. Great little bit of dribbling work past Miranda, ball back of the net. But it always felt like Inter Milan were going to score. There was something about it the last 10 minutes that just, I felt that this goal was going to come, getting the crucial goal. But I'd like to quickly just talk about Candreva. He's a player that I really like to watch. He's sort of, I don't know how to describe him. He's like a playmaking right winger in a way that you get him on the ball and he will make things happen. His rocket from 30 yards was absolutely incredible. What a goal that was. But I liked his overall play. I love how he's a different winger. You know, he's a player that likes to cross, likes to pass instead of dribble and and drift inside. But yeah, a fantastic performance from him as well. But it was a good advert for Italian football again. And AC Milan stay in third position joint second in the league with Roma on 26 points.
Elsewhere in Serie A, second place Roma lost further ground on the leaders Juventus thanks to a last-minute penalty in a 2-1 defeat at Atalanta on Sunday. The Giallorossi are now 7 points behind the leaders, who beat Pescara 3-0 as they continue to stretch their lead at the top of the table as they chase a sixth successive Scudetto. Nice alliteration there. The win was also notable. Guys,
the way they wanted it.
Moise Keane became the first player born in the year 2000 to play in Serie A. In fact, the first player in Europe's top four leagues to do so, which is a bit scary for those of us born in the 80s. Late 80s.
God, that really does sound old now, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Late 80s. It's not like 81 or something. Yeah.
Put that one in there. And finally, guys, forget Spurs. Sampdoria completed the comeback of the weekend, somehow scoring 3 goals in the final 6 minutes to beat Sassuolo 3-2, lifting them up to 11th. Incredible stuff there in Serie A. What about Ligue 1? Lawrence.
Liga. It's getting tight at the top, isn't it, over there in Liga? Very tight in the sense that they're all top of the table. And that's right. Every team in Liga is actually top of the table. You're all winners, is what France says. Obviously not some precedents. They've had to drop out of elections.
Yeah.
Anyway, there are some good results over the weekend, which leave the top three sides, Monaco, PSG and Nice, all on 29 points after just 13 games. It was obviously a good result for Monaco, who beat the club at the bottom of the table, Lorient, 3-0. PSG won against Nantes, 2-0. And Nice, their result was, well, they scraped a 1-0 win against Saint-Étienne. There you go. What I did enjoy was the Unai Emery quote, where he says, "We watch all our games around 12 times."
Yeah. Do you think that's overkill?
Well, I sort of thought that was underkill.
Really? 12 times?
Yeah, because obviously you watch it live. I was wondering whether
with the players afterwards, he walks them through it.
I was thinking one time for each player almost?
This
is what I was wondering is, is it sort of a full team thing, or is that 12 times between the entire side? You know, because if it's between all however many men in the squad, 25, that's disappointing.
Yeah, they must feel left out. They don't feel special.
The question is, does he watch it in regular speed? Because the crazy man that is Bielsa, he watches it like 3 times the speed.
Doesn't he watch it 3 times the speed? Hasn't he also trained himself to watch 2 games at once?
Yeah, he's just a legend.
So he's trained himself to watch. I'm not joking. I think he's trained himself to watch 2 games at once. An increased speed so he can look for patterns. Now, when we say trained, I mean, not many other people have tried this. So, you know, we watch it and sort of be like, there is a pattern. If you do watch it 3 times faster, I suppose you can see patterns.
That's bizarre.
It is fascinating. I mean, I'd love to see him doing that. You know what I mean?
I'm going to train myself now. Now I'm going to dedicate myself. I'm going to do 3 games at once, though. You know,
you've got to push
the envelope.
You know what? There are people out there who probably could do 3 games at once.
Yeah.
But I don't know if you're one of them.
I will be one of them.
Don't you worry, mate. We should try that. Why don't we try doing a live stream where we cover two games?
I think it would just be absolute chaos. But, you know, let's give it a go.
We've all seen some Saturday.
Anyway, it looks like
some of those guys can barely follow one game.
It looks like, as you say, Lawrence, we've actually got a title race on our hands in France, which is obviously exciting. So we'll be keeping an eye on that in the coming weeks. Now it's time for Game of the Weekend, Dave. Each week we're going to pick out a game. Could be the biggest game, could be a game you might not have heard about, a sort of a result maybe that you weren't aware of. This week, I mean, it was a huge weekend for derbies.
Maybe a result you weren't aware of.
No, anyway, you know, we could pick out something different each week. You know, 1 week maybe we'll go to Australia. You know, we had that question last week talking about the A-League. I want to try different things, but I mean, you can't escape this weekend. Like I said, it's all about the derbies. And the biggest one, Dave, was the Madrid derby. Atletico Madrid getting hammered 3-0 essentially by Real Madrid. The big man Ronaldo with his 39th hat-trick for Los Blancos. Arguably the best performance of the season for Real and for their main man.
It's a really weird one. I found Madrid not boring, but quite basic in their approach. You know, they did break on Atletico. That was their key strategy in the game, but it was sort of, they won 3-0 and I didn't feel like they deserved a 3-0 win in a way. I thought Atletico dominated much of the game, especially the first 60 minutes. You know, the formation that Diego Simeone started with, the 4-3-3, really worked and really stretched Real Madrid. And they just hung in there, and the free kick was pretty fortuitous. The penalty was definitely a penalty, an individual mistake from Savic, and then they hit them on the counter-attack. It was sort of like this Madrid team doesn't really have... It doesn't dominate games, but it scores goals, if that makes sense. It just looks for the opportunity to break. It's kind of like what the old Ancelotti teams were like, where they used to just contain teams, or they used to sit quite deep in the bigger games and break. You know, credit to Zidane for getting to play that way. I just feel there could be more for this Madrid team, given the attacking talent in there, given the likes of Modric in central midfield, Isco in there. There's a lot of good players in there, and I don't feel like they're getting the best out of those players, and it is just Cristiano Ronaldo being the big impact player. I think Gareth Bale played very well as well.
Yeah.
But I was kind of rooting for Atletico in the game. I thought Carrasco was absolutely wonderful again. Completed 9 out of his 12 dribbles in the game, 6 shots on goal, and got close to finding the crucial goal for Atletico. But it was quite resolute from Real Madrid, and the back four of Carvajal, Varane, and Nacho and Marcelo. You know, those two centre backs. Varane, obviously, we know his quality, but Nacho played rather well for Real Madrid, given that Sergio Ramos had a knock and Pepe was out injured. So it's kind of like credit to Real Madrid, but I don't want to give them credit in a way, because they were very frustrating and annoying, and they were kind of like what Atletico used to be. And Atletico just let it get away from them, and that's it for the title race for Atletico Madrid. Unfortunately, they are out. Well, that's it, really.
They are Atletico now 9 points adrift. I mean, we spoke to Robbie Dunn just a few weeks ago when he was sort of saying they're the best team in Europe. Since then, it looks like he's jinxed them.
The system is a good system.
Yes, but they've lost 3 of the last 4 in the league and conceded 8 in those matches. It's not like Atletico under Diego Simeone to be so poor defensively, Dave.
Yeah, I think the big thing was fight as well. Like, they had the fight, but they used to be able to bully midfields, like, because Real Madrid set up with Modric, Isco and Kovacic in central midfield. That is such a lightweight central midfield. They should have just bullied them into submission. And I feel like potentially the fight may be going out of the players in recent weeks. You know, they as pumped up as they used to be. Isco had a brilliant spell of about 30 minutes where he was really dominating the game, really starting to open up Real Madrid. But it wasn't, the physicality wasn't there that has been there before. And I'm not sure what's going on, what has gone in the last few weeks with Atletico, but it feels like something's slipping away in a way. And it's upsetting.
What about in terms of some credit for Zinedine Zidane? I mean, you sort of said you do want to give him some, but you don't want to go the whole way. They are still unbeaten in the league since he took over from Rafael Benitez. And, you know, you're talking about the performance of Isco there. He spoke after the game about how they worked on this system all week, the 4-4-2, and tactically, he seemed to get the better of Simeone.
I think it's a frustrating one. It's sort of like how I used to see Ancelotti in a way, that he was quite basic in his setup, and it was quite frustrating that he wouldn't change things, like he wouldn't switch away from his the 4-4-2 he used to play, or the Christmas tree. He'd just rotate players in and out. There was no tactics going on there, and it feels a little bit like Zidane is the same sort of thing. Frustratingly, doesn't appear that he's doing much, but potentially he's doing a lot of work in the training ground in terms of the shape off the ball and then allowing them to just break in the final third. I've got to give him some credit. You've got to give credit to managers that are at the top of their league, that are doing well, but I feel like they will come unstuck against a better team in the Champions League. I feel that they just don't quite have that ability to let, for example, maybe someone like Borussia Dortmund have the ball, or let Bayern Munich have the ball, or Juventus. I feel like those teams would sort of deal with Real this season. I don't think they've got enough there. But I think Ronaldo, coming up big again, that hat-trick, what more can we say about him? He was just in the right place at the right time. It was such a weird performance in a way where, again, he didn't dominate the game, but he scored 3 goals.
Yeah,
so straight.
The free kick was kind of... I thought they were going to chalk it up to Varane because it seemed to deflect off him into the goal. I've no doubt Cristiano Ronaldo is going to claim that one, and Varane will probably have no problem with that either. Like I say, a penalty second, but right place, right time at the end for the tap-in from a great cross from Bale. I'm starting to think my prediction that Zidane is not going to be Real Madrid manager at the end of next year is not going to come true now. I was convinced, you know, that they never last. He's going to get sacked. But it's looking great for him. Fair play, as I said.
That's a very long-term prediction you made there.
I just thought, you know, I think, because he assumed the position at the start of this year, didn't he? Was it January? Was it February? Yep. I think. I was like, nah, this is, you know, end of next year, he'll be gone. He'll be gone. But I still wouldn't be surprised, even though he's won the Champions League, and as I said, he's unbeaten in the league. But the prediction's not looking good. It's not the first time I got something wrong.
Do you think Benitez got a Champions League medal there?
No.
Yeah, he did technically play in it. Do you know what I mean?
He got them to a certain stage, right?
He got them to a good stage.
I don't know.
They didn't go out.
Does clearly. Andre Villas-Boas have one for when Chelsea won it under Di Matteo in 2012? Probably not.
Put it this way. He should have.
He should have. Yeah.
Should have.
It's an injustice.
Because Lawrence essentially, those guys have done. Yeah, I will not rest until Andre Villas-Boas and Rafa Benitez have rightful Champions League medals.
Pick your battles, I'd say. Anyway, it is a massive result for Real Madrid as the table takes shape. It's now 4 points clear of Barcelona, who failed to find a net for the first time at home for the first time since February 2015. Disappointing 0-0 draw at home to Malaga, failing to break down a well-drilled side by Juan de Wendy Ramos. And simply, you know, they're out without Messi, who is ill, and Suarez, who was suspended. They obviously didn't look the same team. And it's now actually Barcelona's worst start to a La Liga season since 07-08, with 26 points after 12 matches.
We all remember what happened after after that year, though. So.
Barcelona now, midweek, they've got to go away to brave Celtic. I think everyone's contractually obliged to call them brave Celtic.
Brave Celtic.
But Dave, you're going to see the show. Sorry?
Dave's going with Stephen Howson.
Dave, you're going to see the match with friend of the show, Stephen Howson. Your ticket went off the bucket list. Seeing Messi play live.
Oh, the second time, Adam.
Wow,
I caught him in 2007 when he was a young
bucket list.
A young player who was playing with, obviously, Eto'o and
did he score?
Henry. No, United won that game 1-0, Paul Scholes, Champions League semi-final.
Oh, that's lovely.
I'd love to see him now. I think that was a young
Messi.
See
him score live, you know? Tick.
Never seen him score live. No, that is what I need to tick off and get an assist and create a number of chances. That's all I need to see. Maybe complete a few passes in the final third, then my life's over. Football and start watching cricket.
Have you ever been to Celtic before as well? That's another one to
tick off. Yeah, no. I've been to Celtic Park away with Manchester United. I think it was 1-1, maybe? I think Royal Carroll had a bit of a stinker for the Celtic goal. But yeah, the atmosphere was really good and I'm looking forward to it.
Lawrence,
played at Celtic Park.
Yeah, I was just waiting for you to say I played at Celtic. yes, Lawrence, you've played on some... Have you played on any other hallowed turfs or just Celtic?
Scored a goal at Wembley once.
Did you?
Yeah, just while I was shooting, got the ball.
Wow.
Took
that
it out of the pitch.
Definitely one to
scored a goal and then got chased off the pitch by security.
Oh, God. I don't think I've ever managed to play on a pro pitch. Dave, have you played on a pro pitch before?
No, never, unfortunately.
Lawrence, he's got two over us there.
Bucket list. Lads, collectively, I think we're completing a bucket list for one man.
Yes. It's almost as if we should do a YouTube series. I think another channel does that one. Anyway, also in the Liga,
Sevilla
made a stunning comeback. It was a weekend of 3-2 comebacks, apparently, in Europe. Vital win over Deportivo. Controversial win, though. Defender Gabriel Mercado scoring the winner in the 92nd minute, even though he probably should have had an early bath, essentially, for what should have been a penalty earlier in the match. But Sevilla now up to third. That their fourth win in the last six, so a big boost for them in terms of their Champions League's hopes. Right. That is your lot. Before we go, it's time for Player of the Weekend. We put the poll out on Twitter this morning. Who has been the European Player of the Weekend? The choices were Suso for AC Milan, Ronaldo, of course, after his hat-trick against Atletico Madrid. And the final choice, Dave, was Dolberg.
Yeah, he had a very, very, very good game against Nijmegen over in the Eredivisie for Ajax. Scored a hat-trick, I think it was within 17 minutes or something crazy like that in the first half, and then assisted the other another goal. Wonderful display from a player that is getting rave reviews from everyone. I watched him earlier in the season in the Europa League against Celta Vigo. Again, he scored like a Bergkamp-esque goal in that game. And he's such a talent. I think he is the next big thing coming out of Ajax, and expect the likes of Manchester City, Barcelona, Real Madrid to all be linked with him in January and maybe a move in the summer. But he's a talent, a big, big talent. And go and check him out. This Ajax team's moved on from the board days where it potentially got a little bit boring from time to time. They've got a lot of pace up top. And they try and get the ball to the front three as quick as possible. So yeah, it's a good team to watch. But Kasper, he is a man in form.
Dolberg, some other finishing third in our poll though, guys. Only 16% of the votes. Suso in second with 23%. And the main man, Cristiano Ronaldo. Zidane said he sealed the Ballon d'Or. He sealed your votes for player of the weekend. 61%.
Some other suggestions, though. I mean, there's some good suggestions out there. Diego Costa was fire.
Yep.
According to Haman, Finbar says, and this is a good one, Gale. Newcastle ripping it up in 21st place in the Premier League. Victor Moses, of course, from Rory, and then Virgil van Dijk, the stupid prick, not salty at all, says main man Mane. And then Yaya Toure was from Jack T.
Oh yeah, of course, that's a good shout. Ronaldo takes it home, guys. Look out next weekend though for our Player of the Week poll on Twitter. You can vote there, and we will reveal the winner.
What about the
next Monday's show?
What about the player of the week that you guys will have seen live? I mean, you guys ticked off another big thing on your bucket list of going to see a game that was not televised, but is now going to end up on YouTube.
Yes, myself and Dave yesterday went to see the real big derby of the week.
A big
the
one.
Top 11 derby. It was Biggleswade United versus hashtag United. Obviously, Biggleswade, the club where Guillaume Balaguer of Sky Sports fame is the director of football, up against Spencer Owen, YouTuber Spencer FC's hashtag team. It was a very entertaining game. I can't reveal the result. Don't want to reveal the result before the highlights come out on Spencer's channel. It was interesting because Guillaume Balaguer was actually playing. He was up front for Biggleswade. Let's just say it wasn't his greatest performance.
Adam, did you know that Guillaume Balaguer used to be at the Espanyol Academy and is renowned for his wonderful left foot?
He's not. but Guillaume, not very famous for him. But hashtag were very impressive, I have to say. We expected Biggleswade to be slightly more competent, to be in a sort of semi-pro side. You know, it was a mix of reserves and first-team players, but hashtag more than held their own.
I don't want to give away the result, but hashtag more than held their own.
They more than held their own. Hey, you know, they could have narrowly lost. It could have been a draw. They could have won very comfortably. Who knows?
True.
You'll have to find out by going to watch the highlights on Spencer's channel. Great fun, though. It's great fun to go down there. It's a great club. They obviously got a lot of fans in because of the sort of the hype around hashtag. So it was bloody cold, but it was good fun.
I think we vlogged it, so that vlog's going to be out, but not until Spencer's video's out.
Yes, we'll release it at the same time as Spencer's video, so do go and check out on the YouTube. Before that, there's plenty of vlogs to watch up there already. There's one from last week where the True Geordie came down to London.
There's more coming out.
There's more coming. So do go and check out the YouTube, subscribe there. Make sure you subscribe to this podcast on iTunes as well. Review the podcast as well. It does help new people find the front free. Tell us what you think of this new and improved Monday show. Maybe you love it, maybe you hate it. Who knows? Tell us in the reviews. And we will be back on Thursday this week for our Champions League and Europa League roundup. Chris will be back then. Do not worry. Until then, Lawrence, where can the listeners find you?
Lozcast, L-O-Z-C-A-S-T on Twitter, or you can find me on YouTube on the front three. YouTube.
Love the YouTubes. Dave?
Just the Statman Twitter. Jump over there, click follow.
Are you
if you like
at the Statman now.
At the I wish at Statman Dave.
guys, you can follow me on Twitter at the Front Three.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
do go and check out the YouTube channel, as we're suggesting. Until Thursday, have a great week.